Welcome to the Art Scene, presented to you each week by UALR Public Radio. A new adventure in the arts was announced earlier this year, WAMA, the Wildwood Academy of Music and the Arts. And just before its opening on June the 9th, the director, Tatiana Reutemann-Mann, was a guest on the Art Scene to describe its goals to bring students together from very young with no music experience to early college, primarily involved in instrumental music, starting with Suzuki, two members of a youth orchestra. Today, Tatiana is back with one of the guest faculty artists, violinist Cindy Wu, from the University of Southern California Music Faculty, with an overview of what has been happening from the opening day in the pouring rain to now, the last week of the program, as the Academy closes its first year, July the 18th. Tatiana, of course, had the monumental task of bringing all the disparate parts together.
I had a clear idea in my mind what kind of people I wanted to work with personally and what kind of people I thought were suitable for our program. I wanted to have great artists. But also, at the same time, I wanted to have people that had some experience and or desire and affinity for kids. And it might sound obvious, but not all great artists necessarily feel comfortable with kids. And most importantly, also with kids of different levels of playing, different experience.
And the patience and the understanding.
And also the skill level then to address it.
Mm-hmm. So did you find when you were looking at the people you wanted, how far back in your learning past these people had been part of your growing up, that you had sort of an instinct for the ones that you wanted?
Oh gosh, I mean, that's a brilliant question. I had a breadth, I think. Cindy is probably the newest, the most recent acquaintance. And as far back as, I guess, my doctorate studies and even further back than that, Alexander, I've known or been familiar with Alexander, violinist who came from Dallas Symphony, probably for about 15 years. He's probably someone that I'm familiar with the longest. But also, you know, so Andrew was the pianist that I met when I did my doctorate degree. We met in 2004. And then Andre, actually, I met the clarinetist, the principal clarinet of Memphis. We met at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And Cindy and I met probably about 3 years ago.
So, yes. Cindy, yes. Now you have been, you're at the University of Southern California?
Yes.
When you and Tatiana met, had you worked together as musicians?
It was very interesting because we were staying at the same host doing different projects in town. And then we just kind of sat down and chat a lot when we were both there. And then she would practice piano, I would practice violin. In our individual spaces, chamber music is like my thing. And then I actually started coaching chamber music when I was 22. And so some of my students were literally my age. But that's something, I mean, I also play chamber music, and that's what Tatiana knew me as. But coaching chamber music is something I've always loved to do, and that's what I do at USC, because I just love bringing children together for music and then making them learn about the importance of knowing how to work with people, understanding people, being able to compromise, discuss, and reach consensus, and also produce something together through their hard work. And so that's something I've always loved doing. So when Tatiana contacted me, I just knew I want to be involved. And then when I started seeing all the press release and everything that she's been posting, sharing with us, and I've been really touched, and I just couldn't wait to be here.
So have you been on the campus today and worked with the
students? And loved it.
Yes.
I work with probably about 10 different kids today and three different groups, and everybody has been showing this incredible enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. everybody's eager to learn, and then they love music. And then because, you know, chamber music is so much about people and music, it's not so much about technique. So it was incredible to see them all having such a great time. And they really were.
Which age group is this then that you have?
Well, Cindy worked today with probably students ranging from 15 to 22. So high school, juniors, seniors.
Right. And to work at this level would be not common for them. What you were talking about in chamber music, whatever ensemble it is, whether it's a duo or a trio or whatever, the stopping and talking amongst each other rather than having somebody tell you what to listen for, which would have been the case as they grew up through the ranks, as you might say.
And that's why I thought it was important to have this chamber music element to our program, because especially for pianists and other instruments as well, you spend so much time practicing on your own, or maybe you have an opportunity to play in an orchestra. But to play with another instrument, I didn't get to do this until I was in college. And I think it's much better for them to start at a younger age. And we also have some younger students as well. So Cindy was working with slightly older, more advanced students. I was working with slightly younger and less advanced students. I mean, we have a student as young as 10 mm-hmm. who's participating. You know, he'll be playing, you know, he plays piano, and he'll be playing with a little violist. So it's also playing chamber music, so you have to play with another instrument, is a huge learning curve.
Do the younger ones, as they learn, have a chance to sit in on some of the older ones rehearsing the way that they would have done with Cindy?
They will. We didn't today. It takes us a couple days to figure everything out, to figure the schedule out and the pattern and the repertoire. So once we settle in, hopefully by Wednesday, they definitely will have that opportunity.
So what about the repertoire? Have you chosen it ahead of time and then changed your mind when you start working with it?
Exactly. Well, the more advanced students, since I was more familiar with their playing, and when you say more advanced, the level of playing is more uniform and stable. So we selected a repertoire with Cindy, and it's going to work. So I'm very excited about that. So we had a good idea. It's the younger players that you kind of have to, and to take into consideration the level, you have to make it almost a little bit easier for a chamber music piece than what they learn in solo, because there's a added learning curve of dealing with somebody else playing with you and another instrument, no less. That takes a little bit of time of figuring out.
Mm-hmm. And when do they get a chance to perform?
At the end of next week, pardon me. We are still figuring out the exact time of the concert.
Right. Yes.
It's a Friday. So either Thursday or Friday, they will have their final performance. We also have our Wild Music Kids. So they present a concert as well.
So explain a little bit why you call them Wild Music Kids.
The Wild Music program is for complete beginners that don't play anything. And so we call this program Wild Music.
But that's not the same as the Suzuki program.
It is the same.
Okay.
So we just have
another title for it.
Yes. Synonymous.
Sounds more exciting than Suzuki.
Yes. Yes. And so these are the kids that for about an hour and 15 minutes, they take Suzuki violin. And then the other hour and 15 minutes or so, they spend in general music. And they're divided into two groups, which rotate.
Now, when you started and we were talking about the beginning and the plans mm-hmm. for it, it sounded like a very long day. How is that working out? Are they coping pretty well with the way the day is planned and what the breaks are and what they do within them?
Yes, I was concerned about that as well, especially we have a faculty concert every session and they're required to stay through. So the faculty concert is usually at 6 and they're required to stay through until it's over by about 6:45, and we're concerned about that. But, you know, they've managed, I think, quite well. That's also obvious. They sit on stage
mm-hmm.
and all those concerts close and personal. And we haven't really noticed any unusual difficulties or issues. The kids seem to really enjoy it. gotten some positive feedback from them. So yes, I think by the end of the day, they're all a little tired, but nothing outside of any normal.
And most of them have had experience over the years. They've been growing up of summer camps and things like that they have to adjust to. But this, with the added dimension of learning and performing,
yes,
is a challenge that I would think the kids are responding to very well.
I think so. The younger kids in their performances, in their concerts, so they get to play the violin, of course, as a group. They have several selections. And then they have a general music performance as well. So during the past two performances, it has been using ORF instruments as well as singing. So they get to prepare a little choral piece, mm-hmm. and they get to use ORF xylophones and or some sort of percussion instruments. And it's very, very clever that some of them even includes a little bit of dancing and choreography and chanting and singing. Actually quite complicated, some of it. Mm-hmm. I was very, very impressed.
Well, the great thing about most children is that they're not confined to a beat. Mm-hmm. They'll put the beat where they want it to go, yeah. and take it from there because they haven't been trained. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be inspiring for people who are teaching them.
Yes, yes. We had an excellent instructor that worked with them these couple sessions. She's, I think, the vice president of the ORF Schulwerk Association of Arkansas. I mean, she's done some really cool things with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is this sort of similar to things that you're teaching at USC? Do you get this range of age group when you're working with them?
I actually, at USC, all of them are music majors. They also audition into the school at a very high level. At USC, I work with mostly students that are incredibly capable, and then they're, right. and the performance degree. Mm-hmm. But at summer festivals, I tend to coach different age groups. Like a couple of summers before this one, I was teaching at a school called Hotchkiss in Connecticut, and then I would coach kids from age 13 to 17. And then some of them are very advanced that end up go to school, like Curtis, Juilliard, but some of them are also much younger. And then so with different skills, you kind of have to find a common ground to make them learn music beyond, you know, what they are capable of doing. And that's what I find that's universal, is the element of the feelings and characters and expressions of music. And like today, I talked to a lot of them about the surprise factor. Because one of the pieces I picked for the group, for the quartet, is a Haydn quartet, Last Movement. And because Haydn was somebody that was very humorous in his time. But of course, right now we have comedians like, you know, Louis C.K. or, you know, all kinds of people that have a different sense of humor than what they used to find funny back in time of Haydn. And then so I kind of introduced to them why something is funny, why something is surprising. And you have to play the piece and then compose it at the time of playing, introduced to the audience that way. And so that's also something I think everybody finds humor, surprise, and I mean human feelings and expressions, that's the common ground everybody can relate.
And yet again, that is full of surprises because everybody reacts differently and has a different emotion when they hear the same music.
Yeah, and then that's the great thing. I asked them a lot of questions. And then so I asked them, okay, what is this minor key, this feel? And then, you know, they're all so enthusiastic. They take it so seriously. And then one of them's like, this one is sorrowful and pain, you know. I was like, oh, that's deep. I was just going for worried, you know. And then, but if they feel the music to be that, yeah. they should express that. But because, you know, our music, the notation can be limiting, people are learning, oh, this is soft, that's loud. But people don't, they don't always are, they're not always taught to think about, oh, forte, this is not just loud, but it's happy, exuberant, or it's angry, you know. And so I think, you know, these kids, they can be very, very creative, and then they can see the music through their own eyes with our introduction.
Yeah. You use the voice sometimes when it looks as though the students are not quite getting the message of what you're trying to teach.
and you get them maybe to say something angrily or happily, and then have music that will illustrate it so that they can begin to associate the sounds with the emotions.
Right. And then the things that nobody's shy. Great thing. I mean, of course, I joke with them and I tell them that, you know, sometimes if your answer is really just really shy and then really boxed in, and then I'll make fun of your answers. Laugh at them a little bit. I say, oh, is that the best you can do? I respond to that. You just treat them like adults. You know, you treat them like friends. And they totally open up to you. I mean, I also keep saying this to them. They're so entertained. Every time I said, okay, this used to be funny in Haydn's time. Even if you don't find this used to be funny, okay? I think they relate to that I also make fun of the music a little bit.
My guests are Tatiana Reutmann-Mann and violinist Cindy Wu, bringing us up to date with WAMA, the Wildhood Academy of Music and the Arts, which closes its first season July the 18th. What is your background, Cindy?
I'm originally from Taiwan. I came to the States when I was 14, and I lived in New York for 4 years and Philadelphia for 5, and now I'm in Los Angeles in the past 6 years.
And you had a lot of basic training from the age of what, 4 or 5?
I started violin when I was 7, and I was a hardcore kid. By the time I was 10, I just wanted to practice five hours a day, and then I wanted to be a violinist. But I wasn't really introduced to this amazing kind of music-making imagination of music till I was at Curtis in Philadelphia when I was 18, 19, when I started playing chamber music.
So that was when you weren't really introduced to chamber music until that time?
Well, I played chamber music, but the concept of I mean, this whole world that I didn't know exist about music or about how you can play with people, that was not till then with some of my really amazing teachers. It made me want to just play chamber music for a living, and I want to coach chamber music for a living, those teachers that inspired me. And then so who knew, I started coaching, as I said before, I started coaching when I was 22. And then I also play with the groups I coach sometimes, and then you can exaggerate a lot of your points by showing them, leading them. And I also turn it very philosophical a lot. Like, I tell them about being a leader and also about being a good colleague, being someone who is willing to communicate for a higher purpose, which is, you know, great music making. And so I find this very meaningful, you know, to introduce this whole world of music that I was so inspired by. And so you know, being a violinist, but I don't teach a lot of violin. I mainly just coach chamber music.
No, and I can see why, because you're speaking in tongues. You know? Yeah. There's so many different emphases and different tones and different combinations of instruments and the fun that you can have with them. Yeah. And why everybody's grown up with the bassoon and other instruments that are used primarily to entertain the young. And the first time I heard the bassoon sing in a really beautiful piece of music, it was revelation because it had that wonderful mellow, the cello sound. It's the one that I find I respond to the most, is that particular level of communication where there's nothing that, it doesn't have any sharp sounds, it's mellow. And so, do you have piano students in this particular program?
Yes, we have pianists as well.
You had one, you mentioned the pianist who came in as the coach, was it?
Yes, oh, in terms of coaches, yes. Yeah. Yes, we had a pianist who was a coach in the previous session. And I was very sneaky because that particular pianist is also a violinist. He's a concert pianist now, but he also plays violin. So he was able to coach on violin.
And are the students that registered for your workshop, for your academy, how many of them have been pianists?
Previous, so about 7 or 8.
And did they come in, some of them, as without any music, or had they already had quite a bit of piano music before they started?
In terms of lessons, experience.
Mm-hmm. And familiarity with the instrument.
That's the range. So the range has been roughly a couple years to, really advanced. I have a student who's going to be a piano performance major in the conservatory next year. And I have a very advanced 15-year-old who might as well be a piano major at a conservatory.
Well, that's interesting that you're attracting that quality as well, that they haven't gone out of state to do some other program.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I'm very fortunate. So so that's one of the, I think, exciting parts and one of the challenging parts of our program is to be able to accommodate different levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's sort of laid out in the basics of what you told me when we talked before, that the whole point was to bring in as young as possible.
Yes.
To this marvelous world of communication in words other than words.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So how many faculty have you brought in so far? How long do they stay? And do they work through for the whole week or right up to performance time or what?
We've had 4 guest artists. They usually stay throughout either a 2-week session or the 3-week orchestra session. So throughout the performance, it varied a little bit because one person at the in the first session he couldn't come for the whole first week, for the whole first session, and so he was only able to come for the first week a little bit more.
Now, did you know that at the time?
Yes.
Okay, so you didn't have to rustle around and find somebody to work in that.
Yes,
first
we
week.
Knew everything, and with the faculty contracts, we knew everything in advance. So I had one person in the first session. We had a violinist in the first week, and they had a clarinetist in the second week. And so we're able to have a good balance.
Yeah. So you've got all the categories, have you? Mm-hmm. The winds, the strings, keyboard, mm-hmm. and the other instruments that come into the orchestra. How many of them would break down into the more esoteric instruments?
The way it often works, and this is how it worked out in this last chamber music session, is that often the students will enroll because of the instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular session, we have a lot of violinists and string players. We don't have any winds. During the orchestral session, we had some winds. We had a trombone player who was doing a violin piece on trombone. And we had a lovely little trumpet player. As well as cello and violin.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a more varied combination of ensembles because these students were enrolled in the orchestra.
Right.
But for this session, we mostly have string players and pianists.
Because all the instruments have their own pitfalls, and the students who have a good experience from the beginning will find they're latching on to a particular instrument, its sound and its ability and the comfort factor they have when they're working with it.
It's that eternal joke, right? I mean, like, among professional musicians, you can always tell a violinist. Mm-hmm. You can occasionally tell a violist or a bass player or a pianist or an oboe player. It's one of those things, you know, a certain personality type is drawn to a certain instrument. And then I think over the years, as you practice your art and practice your instrument, I think the instrument probably shapes us as well. So our personalities are affected. Mm-hmm. And the personality that's attracted to a double bass player would probably be a very different personality that's attracted to a flute player.
Mm-hmm.
To a trumpet.
And also the quality, particularly with the winds, of what your mouth can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you can use a double reed or a single reed or a flute and something that
absolutely.
Certainly with the brass instruments and the horn, for example, is just a natural for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But it may just be because that's the way their physiognomy is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, breathing for a long time is hard.
Yes. Yes.
And you don't have to do it so much on string instruments.
That's right. You just have to keep changing. Yeah. I mean, just as long as you don't stop.
Yes.
But I know talking to one or two, particularly singers or to violinists who have a pianist that they have been working with for years, because there's that wonderful feeling that the accompaniment, the musician that's playing the keyboard, breathes with you, whether you're a violinist or a singer, and it becomes that much more meaningful and more comfortable that both instruments can be happy that they can speak the same language.
I think that's also why a group like a string quartet It's very special because all of them can relate to each other in a certain way because they use their bow to play the strings, play the instrument. I mean, there are other differences, but basically it's the same. And I feel like they can build a special understanding. And I think part of playing chamber music is about supporting each other. And I think, you know, when they understand, just like you said, breathing together, when the string players understand each other, they can play much better together and then also help each other because everybody has strengths and flaws. And then asking them to have this empathy and then always work, and the priority is to work together. And I think that's when people bond over music, that's a very special bond. And
yes, I do have to say that one of the happiest moments of my entire year was on July 4th. Our students had the opportunity to play one march with the Arkansas Symphony at the July 4th celebration. And it was actually a very involved process to get everybody organized and learning the piece, etc. And I was a little nervous for my students how they're going to experience that. I know they were all very excited, but most of them have never been on the same stage as a big professional orchestra and sitting inside of it and playing with them. And I have to tell you, when those kids came off the stage, I mean, the smiles and the excitement. And then, you know, I said, we're going to take a picture. And just the sheer excitement I could feel from them and sheer happiness that they, what an opportunity for them. I mean, that just brought tears to my eyes. And, you know, this one student said, I guess it was her birthday on Saturday, and she was like, best birthday present ever. It kind of reminded me why I'm doing this, and really just made me so happy to see that and to experience that.
That was Tatiana Reutemann-Mann, director of WAMA, the Wildhood Academy of Music and the Arts, and guest artist, violinist Cindy Wu, from the music faculty at the University of Southern California. The Wildwood Academy is into its final week with programs and concerts up to the closing concert on Friday, July the 18th, 4 p.m. on the Wildwood stage. Tatiana, pianist and violinist Cindy Wu, present a recital at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, July the 15th at Trinity Cathedral, with music by Beethoven, Dvorak, and Brahms. Tickets to all are pay as you can. A $15 donation is suggested. Pay at the door or online at wildwoodpark.org. And some events you might like to make a note of. There's a gala concert today at 4 o'clock in the Aaron Center in Bentonville, part of the Opera in the Ozarks offering, bringing in Latonia Moore, the latest star on the firmament of the Metropolitan Opera. She's an alumna of opera in the Ozarks, and she's coming in as a special concert in honor of Jim Swigert, who retired last year as general manager of opera in the Ozarks. The opera festival is nearly over. This is the beginning of its last week. You'll be able to see the three productions, Into the Woods, Così fan tutte, and the Puccini Double Bill, Suor Angelica and Gianni Schicchi, at 7:30 p.m. in the newly cooled Inspiration Point Pavilion. Then at Crystal Bridges on the 16th, The Measure of All Things, a Sam Green documentary with live narrative and live soundtrack, 7:30 in the Great Hall. In Little Rock, Weekend Theatre's musical Next to Normal, just opened, runs through the 27th, with performances Friday and Saturday at 7:30, 2:30 on Sunday. At the Arkansas Arts Center through the 27th, the 53rd Young Arkansas Artist Exhibition. The 56th Annual Delta Show runs through October, and opening July 18th, the 12th National Drawing Invitational. Also visit the Historic Arkansas Museum for a new exhibit, and don't forget the marvelous Chihuly Glass installation at the Clinton Presidential Center. For more information on the arts, visit our online calendar at UALRpublicRadio.org. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us again next week at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.